Kia ora, you're with The House and I'm Johnny Blades. In this weekly edition of The House, we look at thresholds, or how things make or don't make the cut, in two aspects of the Parliament system. One of them is related to list MPs trying to make it into Parliament. The other, which we turn to first, is about what it takes to get the nod for an urgent debate by MPs. Here's Phil Smith.
If you've heard this show before, you'll know that we mention pretty regularly that, against all appearances, the government in New Zealand is subordinate to the Parliament. You might even say we kind of bang on about it. Let's recap, though. Parliament has a variety of jobs. It provides an executive, it passes laws, it permits and approves revenue and spending, and it generally keeps a close eye on what the government's up to. Governments, in their turn, often seem to struggle with this arrangement. They sometimes forget that they're not the boss, and they regularly avoid the scrutiny. It's an eternal tug of war. There are many ways that Parliament attempts its scrutiny of the executive, by, for example, asking thousands of written questions, which are mostly answered by the ministries. Also by asking oral questions in the House, which often provide new and creative definitions for answered.
What's the estimated annual cost of reinstating interest deductibility for landlords once that policy is fully implemented?
Well, what I'm very proud about that policy is making sure that it delivers for renters of New Zealand. The Labour Party used to care about renters in New Zealand.
Parliament also keeps a check via select committee inquiries and via the usual debates and discussions in the House. Occasionally, there are also extras thrown in. One example is urgent debates.
I've received a letter from the Honourable Priyanka Radhakrishnan seeking to debate under Standing Order 399, an announcement about purchasing rules for disability funding.
Parliament's rules especially allow for urgent debates to be requested, so long as the Speaker agrees that the proposal meets three criteria. It must be a particular case of recent occurrence, it must be the government's responsibility, and it must require the immediate attention of the House and the government.
This is a particular case of recent occurrence for which there is ministerial responsibility.
In short, it must be recent, be the government's problem, and be worth the time. Urgent debates are requested a lot more often than they are allowed. Over the previous five parliaments, only a little under 18% of requests were agreed to. Some speakers are more generous than others, and so the per parliament numbers vary quite a lot. The most amenable parliament of recent years was the 53rd, with the speaker's chair being shared between Trevor Mallard and then later Adrian Rutifay. They agreed to more than 28% of requests. The least permissive was the 49th Parliament between 2008 and 11, when Lockwood Smith, as Speaker, allowed a squeak over 12% of requests, or less than half of the 53rd's hit rate. The low success rate may be partly because speakers can tend to be a little bit more protective of their own colleagues, and partly because a lot of requests are pretty hopeful and made for show. I remember an urgent debate a couple of years ago that was allowed, and even the MP who requested it was caught out by it being so, and was obviously unprepared. So far this Parliament, five urgent debates have been requested, and five have been denied.
However, I've listened to the answers to questions asked today, considered the matter because I have an interest in it, but I am not convinced that the time of the House should be set aside today to debate the matter.
Denials are usually on the basis of a topic not being either topical enough or not the government's problem. And in recent years, well-timed ministerial statements have often preempted a request, making an urgent debate redundant. And lastly, speakers also sometimes argue that another debate can satisfy the need. Say if another debate on the day will allow speeches on exactly the same topic. Remember that speakers' rulings are like common law. They can shift the interpretation of the rules and then act as a framework for future rulings. This week, as you've been hearing, there was a request for an urgent debate on an announced change in the funding criteria for disability services. And it's worth noting because the speaker's ruling on it opened new ground, acres of it. The speaker's denial of the request chose that third reason, that another impending debate would suffice.
The annual review debate would be an appropriate vehicle to debate this matter, since it covers the performance and current operations of departments.
The impending debate he was referring to will occur in April, in about 3 weeks' time.
The Leader of the House has indicated that debate will start in April and has called for parties to nominate which ministers will appear before the committee of the whole House during the debate. The application is therefore declined.
And there was another problem, as Labor's Kieran McInulty pointed out.
The concern that I have, however, is that there is still no requirement of the government to accept the proposals from the opposition on the topics and portfolios by which will be debated during the annual review debate. So this House can't be assured that the opportunity to debate this will be given during the annual review debate.
Well, that's true, but the member knows also that the Business Committee will be involved in that process. And I would certainly be an advocate for the opposition having the opportunities that they seek.
So why bring all of this to your attention? Well, partly because it's a really good excuse to chat through the rules around urgent debates, and also because the Speaker, Gerry Brownlee, managed to blow an impressive new hole right through the current interpretation of those rules. And the new ruling might plausibly make that 18% success rate look kind of hopeful.
Now, talking of hopefuls, the following members of Parliament were once hopefuls, then they didn't quite make the cut, but then they did. Among the new and re-elected MPs who got into Parliament after the last general election in October, there are a few who had to first endure a period of waiting and uncertainty. Have you ever wondered what it's like to be a List MP sitting, waiting on the cusp of their party's vote result, to be a prisoner to the vagaries of the MMP system, in a fluid post-election configuration? Well, here's your chance to find out. Firstly, through Labour MP Tracy McClellan. In the election, McClellan lost her Banks Peninsula electorate seat in a tight race, but seemed initially to have got in on the party list. However, other results changed as the special vote process played out, leaving her hanging for a couple of months until Reno Terekatne retired and she moved up the list and back into Parliament. I asked her what it felt like teetering on the edge of being an MP for a while.
Well, it's part of the role. Like, it is something that you put yourself out there for, and you've got to expect any outcome and be prepared for it. And I think, as you said, the campaign is so intense, having just done an intense term, that all of a sudden the result comes in and you think, oh, okay. And so there's mixed emotions, I suppose. You're proud of the campaign team. You know that in spite of the loss, that there was lots of positives, and you just need to take a little bit of time to figure out how you feel about things.
At that point, you're not suddenly thinking, right, I'm going to fall back on a plan B or something?
Not really, no. I mean, you go into a campaign, there's only one plan, and that's, you know, plan A. So I don't think many people would entertain plan Bs. And then afterwards, I suppose it was unique for me because I knew I was in a position that was touch and go. And also I had to go through that waiting for specials, which took another 3 weeks. Yeah,
you had a little longer wait.
Well, initially I was elected on the list. So I, post-election day, election night, I was in, and then other results flipped. So then I wasn't. So it was quite a roller coaster of in, out, and then back in. But that's okay. That's part of democracy. That's what happens, and you've got to be prepared to roll with that.
Yeah, I mean, MMP is, this is how it works.
Exactly, exactly. And as I said, it's not a job. You know, we don't have that security because we're asking people to, we're putting ourselves out there and saying, trust us, or if you like the look of us, you like what we're saying, then put your trust in us. And that's a precarious position to be in at the best of times.
So did the party hierarchy sort of give you any indication? Because you're one of the next cabs off the rank.
Exactly.
Do they kind of say, look, we understand if you wanted to go off and, you know, I don't know, open a fish and chip store or something?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're always free to do whatever you want. But it's just maths at the end of the day. And it was pretty clear to me. I mean, I did go back to work for a bit, but only because there was some tasks that needed to be done. And I thought, well, rather than hang around and wait, I can go back and do that.
What was work in that sense?
The New Zealand Nurses Organisation, which is where I worked beforehand. And just so happened over Christmas period, there was some things that they needed, an extra pair of hands. And I said, well, I've got that. So yeah, so that was good. And it was good to get back into a routine.
The next MP knows well about waiting around for special votes to come in. After all, that's how Celia Wade Brown became Mayor of Wellington in 2010. She stood in the election for the Green Party but didn't quite make it in. However, in January, she became a Member of Parliament when Gowrie's Garraman resigned.
Well, I've stood on the list for the Greens for a number of times, right back from 1999 in our very first independent Green participation in MMP. So I've always been committed to the Greens. And this time, you know, being number 15 and the polls going up and up for the Greens, I really thought that I might surf in on the big green wave. So really the last week or two before the election night, I was getting myself organised and ready just in case.
And I mean, I suppose you would have known, look, special votes take a while to come in, and usually it favours the Green Party in the long run. Was that your thinking, that, you know, wait till these come in and I might make it in at that point?
I got in on the specials when I was first elected as mayor. The second time round was much more decisive, but I know about hanging around for the specials. But I didn't really think that I would get in on the specials on 2023 election, because I was just hoping that Kahurangi would get in, and so she did. We didn't have a high enough polling to get two MPs in on the specials. I was actually mountain biking on Makara Peak when I got the call, so I was quite glad to pause and have a little breather. I'm really sad about the circumstances, but was very pleased, very excited to be in.
Yeah, I mean, indeed, it was obviously a surprise, the circumstances in which you came to be coming here into Parliament. In the meantime, had you made other plans? Where were you at?
Well, I live on a very large block of land next to the Tararua Forest Park. So there is always a huge amount of work to do, whether it's gathering seed, killing stoats, or just looking after the land. So there's a plan B is sort of staring me in the face every time I go home. But I didn't have any external plans. I also had both of my sons and other family up for Christmas. So cooking and walking and going surfing together and just having a really lovely family time took my mind off politics for a good 3 weeks.
Did the Green Party say to you, look, you're the next cab off the rank, just be ready to go in case something happens this term? Do you get feelers in that sense?
I think if you're in the top part of the list, and obviously when Kahurangi got on, I was the next person, it's assumed that you've got the political nous to know that you need to be ready. I was not waiting for any particular event. There've been some times when nobody's resigned. I thought maybe there would be a change at one AGM or another, which are usually in July. So I wasn't expecting anything imminent at all. But, you know, you've committed to going on the list. You've committed to be ready.
That was the Green Party MP Celia Wade-Brown, and before her, Labour's Tracy McClellan, list MPs who made it into the 54th Parliament after initially not quite making it in. You've been listening to The House, a programme made possible with funding from Parliament's Office of the Clerk. Kia pai tōrā.